Chapter 45. A Reunion. Elaine woke in her bed, bleary-eyed. "Egwene," she said, disoriented. "What?" The last memories of the dream were dissolving like honey consumed by warm tea, but Egwene's words remained firm in Elaine's mind. "The serpent has fallen," Egwene had sent. "Your brother's return was timely." Elaine sat up, feeling a surge of relief. She had spent the entire night trying to channel enough to make her dream Turangreal work to no avail. When she'd found out that Birgitta had turned away Gawain, while Elaine sat inside, furious but unable to attend the meeting with Egwene, she'd been livid. Well, Messana had been defeated, it seemed. And what was that about her brother? She smiled. Perhaps he and Egwene had worked out their problems. Morning light peeked through the drapes. Elaine sat back, feeling the powerful warmth through the bond with Rand that had appeared there. Light, but that was a wonderful sensation. The moment she'd begun feeling it, the cloud cover around Andor had broken. It had been about a week since the testing of the dragons, and she'd put all of the Bellfounders in her nation to work on creating them. These days one could hear a steady sound in Camelin, repeating booms as members of the band trained with the weapons in the hills outside of the city. So far she had let only a few of the weapons be used for training. The different teams rotated practicing on them. She'd gathered the larger number in a secret warehouse inside Camelin for safekeeping. She thought about the dream sending again. She hungered for specifics. Well, Egwene would probably send a messenger by gateway eventually. The door cracked, and Melfane looked in. "Your Majesty," the short, round-faced woman asked. "Is everything all right? I thought I heard a cry of pain." Ever since lifting her ban on Elaine remaining in bed, the midwife had decided to sleep in the antechamber outside Elaine's bedroom to keep a careful watch on her. "That was an exclamation of joy, Melfane," Elaine said. "A greeting for the wonderful morning that has come to us." Melfane frowned. Elaine tried to act cheerful around the woman, to persuade her that more bed rest wasn't needed. But perhaps that last part had been a little much. Elaine couldn't afford to appear as if she were forcing herself to be happy, even if she was. Insufferable woman. Melfane walked in and pulled open the drapes. Sunlight was good for a woman with child, she'd explained. Part of Elaine's treatment lately had been to sit in her bed with the covers drawn back, letting the spring sunlight bake her skin. As Melfane moved, Elaine felt a little tremble from inside. "Oh! There was another! They're kicking, Melfane! Come feel!"
"I won't be able to feel it yet, Your Majesty. Not until they're stronger."
She began the normal daily routine. Listen to Elaine's heartbeat, then listen for the babes. Melfane still wouldn't believe there were twins. After that, she inspected and prodded Elaine, performing all of the tests in her secretive list of annoying and embarrassing things to do to women. Finally, Melfane placed hands on hips, regarding Elaine, who was doing up her nightgown.
"I think you've been straining yourself too much lately. I want you to be certain to take proper rest. My cousin Tess's daughter had a child not 2 years ago who was birthed barely breathing. Light be thanked that the child survived, but she had been working the fields late through the day before and not taking proper meals. Imagine. Take care of yourself, my queen. Your babies will be thankful for it."
Elaine nodded, relaxing.
"Wait," she said, sitting up. "Babies?" "Yes," Melfane said, walking to the door. "There are two heartbeats in your womb, sure as I have two arms. Don't know how you knew it."
"You heard the heartbeats," Elaine exclaimed, elated.
"Yes, they're there, sure as the sun."
Melfane shook her head and left, sending in Naris and Sephany to dress her and brush her hair. Elaine endured the process in a state of amazement. Melfane believed. She couldn't stop herself from smiling. An hour later, she settled into her small sitting room, windows all thrown open to let in the sunlight, sipping warm goat's milk. Master Nori entered on long, spindly legs, tufts of hair sticking up behind the backs of his ears, face long and peaked, leather folder under his arm. He was accompanied by Dialin, who didn't usually attend the morning meeting. Elaine raised an eyebrow at the woman.
"I have the information you requested, Elaine," Dialin said, pouring herself some morning tea. Today it was cloudberry. "I hear Melfane heard heartbeats?"
"She did, indeed."
"My congratulations, Your Majesty," Master Nori said.
He opened his folder and began arranging his papers on the tall, narrow table beside her chair. He rarely sat down in Elaine's company. Dialin took one of the other comfortable chairs beside the hearth. What information had Elaine requested of the woman? She didn't recall asking for anything specific. The question distracted her as Nori went over the daily reports on the various armies in the area. There was a list of altercations between sellsword groups. He also talked of food problems. Despite the kinswomen making gateways to Rand's lands to the south for supply, and despite the caches of unexpected food stores that had been discovered in the city, Camelin was running low.
"Finally, as for our, guests," Nori said, "messengers have arrived with the anticipated responses."
None of the three houses whose nobility had been captured could afford to pay ransom. Once the Aron, Sarand, and Marn estates had been among the most productive and extensive in Andor, and now they were destitute, their coffers dry, their fields barren, and Elaine had left two of them without leadership. Light. What a mess. Nori moved on. She had a letter from Talmanis agreeing to move several companies of soldiers from the Band of the Red Hand to Kyrian. She ordered Nori to send him a writ with her seal, authorizing the soldiers to lend aid restoring order. That was, of course, nonsense. No order needed to be restored. But if Elaine was ever going to move for the Sun Throne, she'd need to make some preliminary moves in that direction.
"This is what I wanted to discuss, Elaine," Dialin said, as Nori began to pack up his papers, arranging each one with meticulous care. Light help them if one of those precious pages tore or got a stain on it.
"The situation in Kyrian is complex," Dialin said.
"When is it not?" Elaine asked with a sigh. "You've information on the political climate there?"
"It's a mess," Dialin said simply. "We need to talk about how you're going to manage the maintenance of two nations, one in absence."
"We have gateways," Elaine said.
"True, but you must find a way to take the Sun Throne without letting it look as if Andor is subsuming Kyrian. The nobility there might accept you as their queen, but only if they see themselves as equals to the Andorans. Otherwise, the moment they're out of your sight, the schemes will grow like yeast in a warm bowl of water."
"They will be the equals of the Andorans," Elaine said.
"They won't see it that way if you go in with your armies," Dialin said. "The Kyrianin are a proud people. To think of themselves living, conquered beneath Andor's crown."
"They lived beneath Rand's power?"
"With all due respect, Elaine," Dialin said. "He is the dragon reborn. You are not."
Elaine frowned, but how did one argue with that?
Master Nori cleared his throat.
"Your Majesty, Lady Dialin's advice is not born of idle speculation. I have heard things. Knowing of your interests in Kyrian..."
He'd been growing better at gathering informants. She'd turn him into a regular spymaster yet.
"Your Majesty," Nori continued, voice lower. "Rumors are claiming that you'll soon come to seize the Sun Throne. There is already talk of rebellion against you. Idle speculation, I'm certain, but..." The Kyrianin could see Randall Thor as an emperor, Dailan said. Not a foreign king, that is a different thing.
Well, we don't need to move armies to take the Sun Throne, Elaine said thoughtfully.
I am not certain of that, Your Majesty, Nori said. The rumors are quite pervasive. It seems that as soon as the Lord Dragon announced the throne was to be yours, some elements in the nation began working very subtly to prevent it from happening. Because of these rumors, many people worry that you will seize the titles of the Kyrianin nobility and give them to Andorans instead. Others claim you will relegate any Kyrianin to a secondary state of citizenship.
Nonsense, Elaine said. That's plain ridiculous, obviously, Nori said. But there are many rumors. They do tend to, grow like choke vines. The sentiment is strong.
Elaine gritted her teeth. The world was fast coming to be a place for those with strong alliances, knit together with bonds of both blood and paper. She had the best chance of uniting Kyrian and Andor that any queen had had in generations.
Do we know who has been starting the rumors?
That has been very difficult to ascertain, my lady, Nori said.
Who stands to benefit most? Elaine asked. That's the first place we should look for the source.
Nori glanced at Dailan. Any number of people could benefit, Dailan said, stirring her tea.
I would guess that those with the greatest chance of taking the throne themselves would benefit the most.
Those who resisted Rand, Elaine guessed.
Perhaps, Dailan said, or perhaps not. The strongest of the rebellious elements received great attention from the dragon, and many of them were either converted or broken. So his allies, those he trusted most or who professed greatest allegiance to him, are the ones we should probably suspect. This is Kyrian, after all.
Desdemar.
Yes, it would make sense for Rand's allies to resist her ascent to the throne. Those who had been favored by Rand would be favored for the throne should Elaine prove incapable. However, those people would also have undermined their chances by professing allegiance to a foreign leader.
I should think, Elaine said thoughtfully, that those in the best position for the throne would be those in the middle. Anyone who didn't oppose Rand and so didn't earn his ire, but also someone who didn't support him too wholeheartedly. Someone who can be viewed as a patriot who can reluctantly step in and take power once I've failed.
She eyed the other two.
Give me the names of anyone who has risen sharply in influence recently. A nobleman or woman who fits those criteria.
Dailan and Master Nori nodded. Eventually, she would probably have to build a stronger network of eyes and ears, as neither of these two was perfectly suited to leading them. Nori was too obvious, and he already had enough to do with his other duties. Dailan was... well, Elaine wasn't certain what Dailan was. She owed much to Dailan, who seemed to have taken it upon herself to act as a surrogate mother to Elaine, a voice of experience and wisdom. But eventually, Dailan would have to take a few steps back. Neither of them could afford to encourage the notion that Dailan was the real power behind the throne.
But Light! What would she have done without the woman?
Elaine had to steel herself against the sudden surge of feeling. Blood and bloody ashes, when was she going to get over these mood swings? A queen couldn't afford to be seen crying on a whim.
Elaine dabbed her eyes. Dailan wisely said nothing.
This will be for the best, Elaine said firmly, to distract attention from her treacherous eyes. I'm still worried about the invasion.
Dailan said nothing to that. She didn't believe that Chesmal had been talking of a specific invasion of Andor. She thought that the Black Sister had been speaking of the Trolloc invasion of the Borderlands. Birgitta took the news more seriously, beefing up soldiers on the Andoran borders. Still, Egwene would very much like to have control of Kyrian.
If Trollocs were to march on Andor, through her sister realm would be one of the avenues they might use. Before the conversation could go further, the door to the hallway opened, and Elaine would have jumped in alarm had she not felt that it was Birgitta. The warder never knocked. She strode in, wearing a sword, reluctantly, and her knee-high black boots over trousers. Oddly, she was followed by two cloaked figures, their faces hidden by hoods. Nori stepped back, raising a hand to his breast at the irregularity of it. Everyone knew that Elaine didn't like to see visitors in the small sitting room. If Birgitta was bringing people here... Matt? Elaine guessed.
Hardly, a familiar voice said, firm and clear.
The larger of the figures lowered his hood, revealing a perfectly beautiful masculine face. He had a square jaw and a set of focused eyes that Elaine remembered well from her childhood, mostly when he had noticed her doing something wrong.
Kalad, Elaine said, surprised at the warmth she felt for her half-brother. She rose, holding out her hands toward him. She'd spent most of their childhood frustrated with him for one reason or another, but it was good to see him alive and well.
Where have you been?
I have been seeking truth,
Galad said, bowing with an expert bow, but he did not approach to take her hands. He rose and glanced to the side.
I found that which I did not expect. Steel yourself, sister.
Elaine frowned as the second, shorter figure lowered her hood. Elaine's mother. Elaine gasped. It was her. That face. That golden hair. Those eyes that had so often looked at Elaine as a child, judging her, measuring her. Not merely as a parent measured her daughter, but as a queen measured her successor. Elaine felt her heart beating in her chest. Her mother. Her mother was alive. Morgaze was alive. The queen still lived. Morgaze locked eyes with Elaine. Then, oddly, Morgaze looked down.
Your Majesty,
she said with a curtsy, still remaining beside the door. Elaine controlled her thoughts, controlled her panic. She was queen, or she would have been queen, or... Light. She'd taken the throne and she was at least the daughter heir, but now her own mother came back from the bloody dead?
Please sit,
Elaine found herself saying, gesturing Morgaze toward the seat beside Dialin. It did Elaine good to see that Dialin wasn't dealing with the shock any better than Elaine. She sat with her hand gripping her cup of tea, knuckles white, eyes bulging.
Thank you, Your Majesty,
Morgaze said, walking forward, Galad joining her and resting a hand on Elaine's shoulder in a comforting way. He then fetched himself a seat from the other side of the room. Morgaze's tone was more reserved than Elaine remembered. And why did she continue to call Elaine that title? The queen had come in secret, with hood drawn. Elaine regarded her mother, putting the pieces together as she sat.
You renounced the throne, didn't you?
Morgaze gave a stately nod.
Oh, thank the light, Dialin said, letting out a loud breath, hand raised to her breast.
No offense, Morgaze, but for a moment there I imagined a war between Trakand and Trakand.
It wouldn't have come to that,
Elaine said, virtually at the same time that her mother said something similar. Their eyes met, and Elaine allowed herself to smile.
We would have found a reasonable accommodation. This will do, though I certainly wonder at the circumstances of the event.
I was being held by the Children of the Light, Elaine, Morgaze said. Old Pedro Nile was a gentleman in most respects, but his successor was not. I would not let myself be used against Andor.
Bloody white cloaks, Elaine muttered under her breath. Light, they'd actually been telling the truth when they'd written, claiming to have Morgaze in their possession.
Galad eyed her, raising an eyebrow.
He placed the chair he'd brought over, then undid his cloak, revealing the brilliant white uniform underneath, with the sunburst on the breast.
"Oh, that's right," Elaine said, exasperated. "I almost forgot that, intentionally."
"The children had answers, Elaine," he said, sitting.
"Light, but he was frustrating. It was good to see him, but he was frustrating."
"I don't wish to discuss it," Elaine said. "How many white cloaks have come with you?"
"The entire force of children accompanied me to Andor," Galad said. "I am their Lord Captain Commander."
Elaine blinked, then glanced at Morghais. The elder Trekand nodded.
"Well," Elaine said, "I see we have much to catch up on."
Galad took that as a request. He could be very literal, and began explaining how he'd come by his station. He was quite detailed about it, and Elaine occasionally glanced at her mother. Morghais's expression was unreadable. Once Galad was done, he asked after the succession war. Conversing with Galad was often like this, an exchange more formal than familiar. Once it had frustrated her, but this time she found that, against her better wishes, she'd actually been missing him, so she listened with fondness. Eventually the conversation wound down. There was more to talk about with him, but Elaine was dying for a chance to speak just with her mother.
"Galad," Elaine said, "I'd like to talk further. Would you be amenable to an early dinner this evening? You may take refreshment in your old quarters until then."
He nodded, standing.
"That would be well."
"Dial in, Master Nori," Elaine said. "My mother's survival will lead to some delicate issues of state. We will need to publish her abdication officially, and quickly. Master Nori, I'll leave the formal document to you. Dialin, please inform my closest allies of this news, so that they will not be taken by surprise."
Dialin nodded. She glanced at Morghais. Dialin wasn't one of those whom the former queen had embarrassed during the days of Ravin's influence, but she had undoubtedly heard the stories. Then Dialin withdrew with Galad and Master Nori. Morghais glanced at Birgitta as soon as the door closed. The warder was the only other one in the room.
"I trust her like a sister, mother," Elaine said. "An insufferable older sister sometimes, but a sister nonetheless."
Morghais smiled, then rose and took Elaine by the hands, pulling her up into an embrace.
"Ah, my daughter," she said, tears in her eyes. "Look at what you've done. Queen in your own right."
"You trained me well, mother," Elaine said. She pulled back.
"And you're a grandmother. Or soon will be."
Morghais frowned, looking down at her.
"Yes, I thought as much from looking at you." "Who?"
"Rand," Elaine said, blushing,
"though it's not widely known, and I'd rather it stay that way."
"Rand Althor," Morghais said, her mood darkening.
"That mother,"
Elaine said, raising a hand to grasp hers.
"He's a good man, and I love him. What you have heard is exaggeration or bitter rumor. But he's... Elaine, a man who can channel. The dragon reborn."
"And still a man," Elaine said, feeling his knot of emotions in the back of her mind, so warm.
"Just a man, for all that is demanded of him."
Morghais drew her lips into a thin line. "I shall withhold judgment. Though in a way I still feel that I should have thrown that boy in the palace dungeons the moment we found him skulking in the gardens. I didn't like how he looked at you even then, mind you."
Elaine smiled, then gestured back to the seats. Morghais sat, and this time Elaine took the seat directly beside her, still clutching her mother's hands.
She sensed amusement from Birgitta, who stood with her back against the far wall,
one knee bent so that the sole of her boot rested against the wood paneling.
What? Elaine asked.
Nothing, Birgitta said. It's good to see you two acting like mother and child, or at least woman and woman, rather than staring at each other like two posts.
Elaine is queen, Morgaze said stiffly. Her life belongs to her people, and my arrival threatened to upset her succession.
It still might muddy things, mother, Elaine said. Your appearance could open old wounds.
I will have to apologize, Morgaze said. Perhaps offer reparations.
She hesitated.
I had intended to stay away, daughter. It would be best if those who hated me still thought me dead. But no, Elaine said quickly, squeezing her hands. This is for the best. We simply will have to approach it with skill and care.
Morgaze smiled.
You make me proud. You will be a wonderful queen.
Elaine had to force herself to stop beaming. Her mother had never been free with compliments.
But tell me, before we go further, Morgaze said, voice growing more hesitant, I have heard reports that Gabriel was...
Ravine, Elaine said, nodding.
It's true, mother. I hate him for what he did. I can see him using me, driving spikes through the hearts and loyalty of my dearest friends. And yet there is a part of me that longs to see him, irrationally.
He used compulsion on you, Elaine said softly.
There is no other explanation. We will have to see if any from the White Tower can heal it.
Morgaze shook her head.
Whatever it was, it is faint now and manageable. I have found another to give my affection.
Elaine frowned.
I will explain that at another point, Morgaze said. I'm not certain I understand it yet. First, we must decide what to do about my return.
That is easy, Elaine said. We celebrate.
Yes, but nothing, mother, Elaine said. You have returned to us. The city, the entire nation will celebrate.
She hesitated. And after that, we will find an important function for you. Something that takes me away from the capital, so I cast no unfortunate shadows.
But a duty that is important, so that you are not thought of as having been put out to pasture.
Elaine grimaced.
Perhaps we can give you charge of the western quarter of the realm. I have little pleasure in the reports of what is happening there.
The Two Rivers? Morgaze asked.
And Lord Perrin Ebarra?
Elaine nodded.
He is an interesting one, Perrin is, Morgaze said thoughtfully. Yes, perhaps I could be of some use there. We have something of an understanding already.
Elaine raised an eyebrow.
He was behind my safe return to you, Morgaze said. He is an honest man, and honorable as well, but also a rebel, despite his good intentions. You will not have an easy time of it if you come to blows with that one.
I'd rather avoid it. She grimaced.
Easiest way to deal with it would be to find him and execute him, but of course she wasn't going to do that. Even if reports had her fuming enough to almost wish that she could.
Well, we shall begin working on a way, Morgaze smiled.
It will help you to hear of what happened to me. Oh, and Linny is safe. I don't know if you've worried over her or not.
To be honest, I didn't, Elaine said, grimacing, feeling a spike of shame.
It seems that the collapse of Dragonmount itself couldn't harm Linny.
Morgaze smiled, then began her story. Elaine listened with awe and not a little excitement. Her mother lived.
Light be blessed, so many things had gone wrong recently, but at least one had gone right.
The threefold land at night was peaceful and quiet. Most animals were active near dusk and dawn when it was neither sweltering nor freezing.
Avienda sat on a small rock outcropping, legs folded beneath her, looking down upon Ruidion, in the lands of the Djen Aiel, the clan that was not. Once Ruidion had been shrouded in protective mists. That was before Rand had come. He'd broken the city in three very important, very discomforting ways. The first was the simplest. Rand had taken away the mist. The city had shed its dome like an Algaida Siswai unveiling his face. She didn't know how Rand had caused the transformation. She doubted that he knew himself. But in exposing the city, he had changed it forever. The second way Rand had broken Ruidion was by bringing it water. A grand lake lay beside the city, and phantom moonlight filtered through clouds above made the waters shine. The people were calling the lake Sodrella Aman, Tears of the Dragon, though the lake should be called Tears of the Aiel. Randall Thor had not known how much pain he would cause in what he revealed. Such was the way with him. His actions were often so innocent. The third way Rand had broken the city was the most profound. Avienda was slowly coming to understand this one. Nakomi's words worried her, unnerved her. They had awakened in her shadows of memories, things from potential futures that Avienda had seen in the rings during her first visit to Ruidion, but that her mind could not quite recall, at least not directly. She worried that Ruidion would stop mattering very soon. Once the city's ultimate purpose had been to show wise ones and clan chiefs their people's secret past, to prepare them for the day when they'd serve the dragon. That day had come. So who should come to Ruidion now? Sending the Aiel leaders through the glass columns would be reminding them of To they had begun to meet. This bothered Avienda in ways that itched beneath her skin. She didn't want to acknowledge these questions. She wanted to continue with tradition. But she could not get them out of her head. Rand caused so many problems. Still, she loved him. She loved him for his ignorance, in a way. It allowed him to learn. And she loved him for the foolish way he tried to protect those who did not want to be protected. Most of all, she loved him for his desire to be strong. Avienda had always wanted to be strong. Learn the spear, fight, and earn Ji. Be the best. She could feel him now, distant from her. They were so alike in this way. Her feet ached from running. She'd rubbed them with the sap of a sagada plant, but she could still feel them throbbing. Her boots sat on the stone beside her, along with the fine woolen stockings that Elaine had given her. She was tired and thirsty. She would fast this night, contemplating, then refill her waterskin at the lake before going into Ruidion tomorrow. Tonight she sat and thought, preparing. The lives of the Aiel were changing. It was strength to accept change when it could not be avoided. If a hold was damaged during a raid and you rebuilt it, you never made it exactly the same way. You took the chance to fix the problems, the door that creaked in the wind, the uneven section of floor. To make it exactly as it had been would be foolishness. Perhaps traditions, such as coming to Ruidion and even living in the Threefold Land itself, would need to be re-examined eventually. But for now, the Aiel couldn't leave the wetlands. There was the last battle, and then the Seanchan had captured many Aiel and made wise ones into Damane. That could not be allowed. And the White Tower still assumed that all Aiel wise ones who could channel were wilders. Something would have to be done about that. And herself? The more she thought of it, she realized that she couldn't go back to her old life. She had to be with Rand. If he survived the last battle, and she intended to fight hard to make certain he did, he would still be a Wetlander king. And then there was Elaine. Avienda and she were going to be sister wives, but Elaine would never leave Andor. Would she expect Rand to stay with her? Would that mean Avienda would need to as well? So troubling, both for herself and her people.
Traditions should not be maintained just because they were traditions. Strength was not strength if it had no purpose or direction. She studied Ruidian, such a grand place of stone and majesty. Most cities disgusted her with their corrupt filth, but Ruidian was different. Domed roofs, half-finished monoliths and towers, carefully planned sections with dwellings. The fountains flowed now, though a large section still bore the scars of when Rand had fought there. Much of that had been cleaned up by the families who lived here, Aiel, who had not gone to war. There would be no shops, no arguments in streets, no murderers in alleys. Ruidian might have been deprived of meaning, but it would remain a place of peace. "I will go on," she decided, "pass through the glass columns." Perhaps her worries were true, and the passage was now far less meaningful, but she was genuinely curious to see what the others had seen. Besides, knowing one's past was important in order to understand the future. Wise ones and clan chiefs had been visiting this location for centuries. They returned with knowledge. Maybe the city would show her what to do about her people, and about her own heart.